email.
I don't know.
By my watch, I've got 9 o'clock, so we'll just go ahead and get started. All right, we're going to get started. Good morning. Let's start with a roll call, starting with my friend Jeff.
Jeff Clemens, Council Research.
Make sure the green button is lit.
Assistant Chief Jonathan Randolph with JSO.
Ben Carter, Facility Manager, JSO.
Assistant Chief Scott Dingy, JSO Services.
Larry Schmidt, Director of Services for JSO.
Michael Boylan, District 6, Council.
Brian Sitnick, Gilbane Building Company, Co-Chair.
So said good morning to everyone. I wanted to start to let folks know a couple of things. Next week, we're going to be hosting a special meeting of the full committee. As you know, we have 5 working groups. Yesterday, the pretrial detention center working group met and shared with us, and their focus is on existing facility and immediate needs to address the safety and security of that facility. As you know, we did a similar kind of run through with this working group weeks prior. And so next week, we are going to host a meeting to move forward the collective request to address both immediate needs. It's not something we can hold off on for multiple years. Some of it, certainly the sense of urgency of what needs to be done is number one, but also number two, it doesn't make sense to put these off 2, 3, 4 years. And so Mr. Burball was there yesterday, and he understands. I've had conversations both with the acting CFO and the CAO of the administration, letting them know we're going to be doing this, and I think they're going to be open to our conversation. So we'll keep you posted as to when that, Sonia, has that date been, or time been set yet for the special committee meeting?
It has.
What is it? All right, less than 1 minute. So today we have a couple of things to do. Assistant Chief Dingy has an additional presentation for us from the JSO with respect to their future needs. And then Ryan has done a marvelous job in starting to pull together some of the subject matter experts who are in the business of building these kind of facilities. I thought we'd hear from Assistant Chief Dingy first to give him, give your folks and others a better sense of what their expectations and hopes are for the future facility. And we'll start with that. Assistant Chief, yours.
Thank you, Councilman. Actually, we have an additional handout here, the PMB maintenance needs. At our last meeting, you had asked us to comb through those immediate needs or maintenance needs that are going to be needed in the near future to kind of further put a finer point on what's critically needed and what we could maybe put off for the future if needed. And so Mr. Carter did an excellent job, I think, of breaking those costs down even further from what we had before. I'll leave you with that format there unless you had any questions or needed any clarification.
Just 2 questions. So the ask we want to make next time is, next week is what? What number on this page? The 5995?
That would be, yes, sir. That would be the total, yes, sir.
Okay. And secondly, are these just estimates that Mr. Gardner has done, or are these actual bids?
These are estimates. A couple of them are actually in the CIP, and not there's no bids, but the figures are fairly accurate now, and they're with the assistance of Public Works.
Just as a matter of information, the folks at the detention center actually went out and got contractors to come in and provide some sense of numbers on theirs.
Yes, sir.
So I'm sure they're reasonably close.
Yes, sir.
At any rate. All right. Thank you for that.
So for the other portion of the presentation, it's the handout there that's titled Future Police Memorial Building. I'll keep it brief because I know we have quite a full agenda today. But basically, at our last meeting, you had asked us to clarify some of the spaces that we have both in the PMB, the Police Memorial Building, and off-site locations just to give us an idea of truly what our minimum space is now. If you flip to that first slide past the cover page there, you'll see a current breakdown of what we have at the Police Memorial Building, which is approximately 739 employees. with about 165,000 square feet of air-conditioned space, not necessarily workspace, but air-conditioned space. So we went and with Mr. Carter's assistance, his team, which is this additional handout I have that says the square footage totals. We have a 2021 survey when we did this and a 2023. So the one that says previous space is from 2021. And then currently, that's what we have in the Police Memorial Building now. It's kind of hard to understand, but our building is in flux continually due to lack of space and needing to move people around to better facilitate workspace, that kind of thing. Our footprint inside the actual walls of the building changes consistently. I mean, it's just constant. And this is as of today. We have we're going to be moving our missing persons unit out of there in the next couple weeks. So out of the PMB. So that's the kind of change that we're always going through. So it's always a fluid number. But if you on that handout for the square footage totals, if you flip to the very back, the last page. You see it broken down by floor of how our square footage breaks down of office space. But in the end, what we tried to do is get a pretty good number on the square footage of workspace of people that really should be in our Police Memorial Building as well. So at the end, we have an actual workspace of about 110 or so thousand square feet inside the Police Memorial Building. Off-site, we have approximately another roughly 74,000 square feet of office space and workspace that is should be in the PMB, we just don't have the room for. And we have approximately 184 employees that are off-site as well. And that's not including our patrol division. These are people in our and not even including Homeland Security, who's going to be at the Florida Blue. So it's different units. For example, our violent crimes unit, our homicide cold case unit, our crime gun intelligence center, all that is currently housed off-site, which ideally we would want all that back in one main building. So try to give an idea of what our minimum space would be for this new building.
Maybe we get an answer to the question from Gilbane and others with how does this compare to other facilities in terms of square footage undercover? If just for point of reference, as we take a look at those numbers.
And to be clear, these numbers are for today's operations. This doesn't take into account future growth.
100%, yeah. So that is the minimum space that we're actually operating out of right now. And again, that's not including our training academy, our substations for patrol, because those are all going to stay where they're at. This is purely just what is in the Police Memorial Building or what truly should be in the Police Memorial Building. We just don't have space for it.
And obviously, I know we talked about it last time, but parking as well.
Yes, and parking is obviously one of our biggest concerns. The second portion the large portion here, and I won't go through every single detail, but basically we had a meeting with all our division chiefs from within the Police Memorial Building, people that have units or personnel that either are in the Police Memorial Building or should be in the Police Memorial Building, and they're currently not. So we met with them and say, okay, this is what we have now. What do we need for the future? What are we projecting for the next 20 to 25 years, not only in personnel growth, but also in spaces that we don't currently have now, unique spaces that we don't have. And so as we flip through, we can flip through the presentation here. I broke it down by area, by either division or area, starting with the administration, which is like the sheriff's level and the director's levels. So one of the things we don't have right now is a dedicated meeting space for our weekly crimes meeting where the sheriff goes through and meets with all the pertinent staff to discuss what's going on crime-wise within the city and how we're addressing those current trends and trends that are popping up, identifying problems and areas that need to be addressed with our various units. So, that's one thing on the administration side that we would like to include is a large, similar to this room, for example, audiovisual type space. For our patrol support division, their supervisors, their lieutenants, their sergeants are all off-site right now. We would certainly want to bring them back on-site. Like I said, I won't cover all the points. You can go through that as you need. But you'll see as you flip through just different things. And another large addition that we would like to our future building would be a dedicated emergency operations center. Currently, obviously, the city has one. We're certainly in no way, you know, wanting to supersede that. But there are times when we have events that are JSO specific where we would need a dedicated internal EOC and also one that could link to other units as well. Our investigations division, they're anticipating a large expansion as the city population grows over the next 20, 25 years. Obviously, our patrol division will expand as well. But commensurate with that, we're going to need additional investigative resources, different lab space, that kind of thing that we don't have now. They're thinking in the next 20 to 25 years that the investigations will expand somewhere around 94, 95 employees at least. We're going to need additional secure interview rooms that are soundproof. One of the things we don't have right now is a secure, we have an off-site facility, but we would want one on-site, like a secure parking garage that is for evidence processing vehicles, bringing in vehicles that are used in crime so they can be processed. If you flip ahead to our crime analysis unit, which is co-located with our real-time crime center, currently, our real-time crime center is not staffed 24/7. That is the long-term goal over the next 10 to 20 years is to be able to expand their staff so we can have this real-time crime center operating 24/7. That would be a very large expansion. We would need additional space and personnel for that. The crime analysis unit, a lot of people in the civilian world don't understand what that is and how important that is for us to be able to take all the crime data that we have, process that, and then better allocate our resources to address crime trends, to get ahead of crime trends. They're going to need to expand as our agency expands as well.
apologize for interrupting, but I think it's really important to appreciate the fact, you know, the impact of building a new facility can have on in terms of curtailing crime in our community, and the efficiency of your operation is part of that process.
Yes, sir.
I think if we talk about this and we try and get folks to understand, appreciate the importance of both the new facility and the expanded facility, is that this will have a genuine impact, a direct correlation between the effectiveness of your JSO and what's happening on our streets.
Yes, sir. Exactly. Our professional standards and training division, they expect to add, and this is just inside the Police Memorial Building, this wouldn't account for additional officers at our training academy to train new recruits or anything like that, but just inside the Police Memorial Building, they expect to expand approximately 20 employees over the next 20 years or so. Another room capability we don't have right now is a dedicated hearing room. We have safety board, we have response to resistance boards, we have administrative boards that hear cases routinely that are confidential in nature in the beginning. So we don't have a secure room set aside for that with recording and audiovisual capabilities as well. So that's something we would definitely want to add. Something we have a smaller version now, but as we move into the future, more things are digitally based online. Social media, that kind of thing. We would like a multimedia studio and production room, an advanced press briefing room, some virtual reality training space. I think that would be very efficient space-wise, something that we could utilize and reutilize in different methods, but have just a small space that has multi-purpose. Easy to be efficient and train different scenarios in that environment. Our human resources division expands approximately 30 employees. Another thing we don't have in human resources currently is an onboarding classroom, a large classroom space where we can do testing and training and evaluation of potential applicants. Services is really, and that's where I come from, that's where the home that we're from. But where we're lacking right now, seriously lacking, is in property and evidence storage space. We're going to need a whole new expansion for that. Our communication center is, the footprint on that is very limited right now. We would want a much larger, you know, again, as Jacksonville grows and more 911 calls come in, more non-emergency calls come in, we're going to need more dispatchers, more space. So we're looking to expand the footprint of our current comm center to accommodate these additional 50 to 70 dispatchers and personnel that go along with the comm center. We don't have any truly dedicated training space. We have a smaller one, but we would definitely need to expand that with computer stations so they can practice taking calls and what they the skills that they need to learn to handle the comm center duties. A big portion, and I'll hit on kind of this at the end. Our supply unit is definitely very limited in space right now. We would need additional warehouse and storage space for them, especially if we're going to, as we continue to grow as an agency, the supply unit must grow to accommodate that as well. Our computer personnel, our information systems management, obviously digital and the technology end of law enforcement is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, so they're going to need to grow as well with approximately 70 or so employees there in total. So basically to wrap it up to save some of the time, to make sure we have enough time, some of the areas that we really were never included in our original building that really need to be added to our new building, a secure prisoner sally port. We don't have that right now, which when we have an officer out in the street make an arrest and bring a suspect detainee in for questioning by our investigation division, we literally park them in our main parking lot and walk them in the front door where the citizens come in and out of. Obviously, that is not an ideal situation. We would want to have a secure sally port where prisoners could be obviously kept separate from where the public would be. Obviously, reduce danger and potential issues there. Employee wellness space.
I have to tell you a quick personal story. Back in 2005, I was doing a ride-along with the sheriff, not the sheriff, but with an officer, and we pulled into the parking garage down below, and she went inside, and I'm sitting in the car by myself, and there's a young man sitting in the car next to me, and somebody brought him out some food, set or whatever, and she came back out, and she said, "You see that guy over there? He just shot two people." Went, well, that's good. Here I am, right next door to him.
Yeah, which obviously is not ideal. not a good situation. We would definitely want a secure.
Got my attention for sure.
Yeah, definitely want a secure area for that not to occur.
Yeah.
Across the board, when speaking with our division chiefs and their personnel, when they spoke to their personnel, the lack of windows in the building and certainly employee wellness areas, break rooms are very, very important to the morale, the working environment that our people. Currently don't have almost no break rooms, we have zero in the way of wellness rooms. Certainly that's something that's very important to our employees. A gym, a good-sized, well-appointed gym, potentially a daycare. I know we've spoken about that before. That would do wonders for the shift work that our personnel, our comm center people especially, we have 24/7 staffing, and child care is very big issue for them. Would help us with retention, recruiting. And then last, and we have a picture of it there at the very end, we really, we've seen this at other facilities like we've talked before, but think it's very important to have a community room for the public to be able to come in and interface with JSO in an area that they can use with or without JSO, but also, have a space that we can utilize together with the community and build those connections that we always try to foment.
The only thing I comment I would offer, thank you, first of all, this is great. This is actually more than I expected in terms of today. And to your earlier point, Ryan, this is really, we're way ahead of the game in terms of giving some serious thought to the needs here, so I do appreciate that. Given your usually the versatility or the flexibility of your operation today, I think it might be helpful for those who look to build these kind of facilities to talk about the versatility, particularly of the large spaces. I think there are a number of them in here, but could they be interchanged in terms of how they are used? So we don't need 16 of them because every department or division needs its own large space.
Correct. Yes, sir. And certainly, in one of the terms that was brought up to me would be modular spaces.
Exactly.
Yeah, easily convertible.
Yes.
You could use it for a meeting one day and a training session the next. And
that's what I'm talking about, making sure we give them some latitude to be able to understand and appreciate the flexibility of some spaces. Offices, you know, certain areas you need 24/7. You don't want to compromise those at all. But the flexibility of other spaces, I think, is important to appreciate.
Yes, sir, definitely.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I wish I had a calculator to calculate all the square footages you needed.
Well, it would be darn close right here.
Well, I, to Councilman Boylan's point, I mean, we spoke yesterday with some of the folks you're going to hear from later, and kudos to your team for being further ahead of the game than most other organizations typically are at this point. So it makes it easier, you know, when you're informed to have conversations like we're about to have. So if you're good with it. I'd like to introduce a few folks. We've got two folks presenting here. We've got a couple people online, too, if you want to step up to the podium, and I'll join you here in a second. Councilman Boylan asked myself to kind of try to wrangle as many industry professionals as we could, and you'll hear from some of them at our next meeting. But at this meeting, we've got some true leaders on the construction and the design side. Chris Wilson's with Gilbane Building Companies. He's a Center of Excellence Leader for Justice and Public Safety. Mike Condor is here, Managing Principal with Arrington Watkins. If anyone knows Arrington Watkins, very focused on public safety and justice type work. Matt is on. Yep, Matt Gorman's on. He's on Arizona time, so hopefully
thank
he's
you,
got plenty of coffee in him. And I know he had a long drive yesterday across the desert. So Matt is he's the Managing Principal of Public Safety. The reason we wanted Matt on this particular call is he's working on the City of Phoenix's new headquarters, which is an adaptation of an office building. So we had that conversation at our last meeting and thought that brought a little bit of relevance to the meeting here. And we also have Tammy Perry is on. Tammy is with Collier's Engineering and Design Group. She's a grant writer. And she has a history in emergency services. So I thought at the end of this presentation, we'll talk a little bit about financing opportunities, which is a bigger conversation, but just having some awareness to it would be appropriate. So do you mind sharing the PowerPoint? I kind of gave some introductions and didn't allow you guys to introduce yourself. So Chris, you want to just?
Sure. I'm Chris Wilson with Gilbane. We are Justice and Public Safety Division. So I'm a natural resource. I'm able to assist here as well as across the country and can bring some of those lessons learned, both from some of the design stuff as well as some of the mostly the construction stuff, that what's important to your departments in other areas, so we can share those lessons learned with you. And not that you have to do it that way, but to make, at least give you the awareness of what other places are doing and that you may want to consider.
So Mike Condor with Arrington Watkins Architects. So we, Arrington Watkins has been around for almost 30 years. Next year is going to be our 30th year. And our focus is on public safety and justice. 90+% of what we do is law enforcement, public safety, and then correctional, including courthouses, jails, and prisons, and things like that. So we fully understand the full justice process. For me specifically, I've been with the company about 15 years, managing principal. I oversee most of our correctional work, and the courthouses, jails, and prisons. Interface a lot, quite a bit with the public safety work. I'll let Matt introduce himself.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. So Matt Gorman, I've been with Arrington Watkins 29 years. Been in this industry for about 40, and really have focused on law enforcement. As I mentioned, I drove across the desert yesterday. I was in California. I'm doing work for California Highway Patrol, and we're doing a new police station, which just received its funding Tuesday night at council. So working all over the country, trying to help agencies get going, develop their facilities, and get them to a place where they move in and can operate efficiently and serve their communities.
And Matt, we've been around for 30 years, so Matt was the first employee after Arrington and Watkins.
Yeah.
So I just want to just touch on the agenda real quick to kind of give you an idea of the roadmap, what we're going to talk about here. So we're going to talk a little bit about these assessments. You guys have done a great job, so that'll be quick. You stole a little bit of our thunder and some of the stuff you've already gone through. We're going to talk about how to pick a management team to for the project to be successful. Delivery method, there's a number of different delivery methods. There's probably a couple here that would really work well for you. Brian will talk about those a little. And then, as you mentioned last time, you asked us to talk about new versus adaptation. We'll talk about some design concepts. You've obviously got a good, great start on a lot of that. Some of the building things you need to start thinking about. And then, obviously, life cycle is important. What kind of equipment are we putting in this? Because it's important, because those costs will continue to grow if we don't do it right at the beginning. And then talk about some financing options that might be out there. So skip to the next slide. As I said, great start. We were going to ask you a lot of questions, but you've probably answered a lot of them already. We probably have a couple more. But at this point, as Councilman was talking, there's some synergies that can be used. And you have, I think, 165,000 square feet currently. It's probably not the most efficient. But looking at some of those adjacencies, what departments need to be next to work well. And you maybe ought to consolidate some of that space down, so you may not need 165 to do your current operation if you use it more efficiently. So bring a design professional in to really help understand how to get to that next step is really, really important. Seeing where as we also mentioned, that not all the spaces are going to be used all the time. So there might be some other things that can be done as well. We know you're working off in a jail as well. Are you thinking that would be a consolidated facility, the sheriff's department and the jail next to each other? Not that you need to decide today, but have those discussions. Does it make sense to have them together? Does it make sense to
We've already spoken with the sheriff and his team about that, and that is his vision to have a campus-style location, obviously starting with the jail and a police memorial building, but maybe some room for further expansion as things develop in the future.
Sure. Great. City Council approval to spend the money. Very important. Move forward.
And I'd like to encourage questions and comments.
Yes, please
from
do.
The committee.
It's less boring for you guys. We don't just sit here and talk. As you go through this presentation, you'll see some pictures and projects that both us and Arrington have worked on. This is actually a community room in San Jose, which is right outside of the lobby. We're adjacent to the lobby. So again, big community space down here open floor. It's actually a really nice space. But something like that, the community uses. I've gone there for other meetings that have nothing to do with the police. Mm-hmm. It's a great space. But picking your management team is really important. Who from the city is going to be on the team? These are the things you need to start thinking about now. I mean, I know you've talked a little bit about, I can't remember your name, sorry.
John Randolph.
Yeah, that you designated him to be the person who's going to carry the torch as you guys all retire. but there will obviously be some other people that will need to be involved in the sheriff's standpoint. Who's in the city? Is there a public work department that manages projects in general?
Yep. I think.
And then facilities as well. We can never leave facilities out. Looking at that equipment and what the long-term use and wear and on the buildings can be. And then, do you need an owner's rep or a program manager to kind of help assist you with that? Mm-hmm. That kind of depends on which delivery type you decide to go with, whether it's design build, construction manager at risk, design bid build. Ryan will talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of decisions that need to be made that we're not thinking about right now, even as far as when you get into construction and there's a change order, who signs that? Who is the authority to sign that? Is it someone from the city? Is it a joint signature with JSO? I think developing a responsibility matrix now and getting that blessed by city council and others, because city council is likely going to be paying for this thing. You know, it's
taxpayers pay for this.
Well, right. Facilitating the payment.
I don't have that kind of money.
I think that's something very important.
Step over the mic. Thank you.
So let's just jump into the delivery method real quick. Okay, there's some delivery methods that the city of Jacksonville allows per procurement standards. And it's important that I think we talk about this so you have just awareness for decisions that are going to be made in the future. The three main delivery methods that the city of Jacksonville typically puts out is a stipulated sum. It's a design bid build. You select an architect design team, you design it, you have a permittable set of documents, and you bid it. And low bid wins, and you move forward as a team. The other option is construction management at risk. Hire the architect, start design, hire the construction manager, who is essentially the general contractor, early in the pre-construction process. They support the design process from a budgeting, estimating, constructability standpoint, getting outreach to the local subcontractor market, outreach to JSET firms who would want to participate, and just generally supporting the process and acting as a check and balance between us, the architect, JSO, and the city.
We are, as it happens, we're revisiting our procurement process.
Okay.
And it's going to be put into place well by the time we get to this project.
Right.
But one thing we are focusing a lot on is a fair amount of direct purchase, where the city purchases, it's obviously to save on the sales tax. So that has to be part of the process as well, to make you aware that direct purchase is going to play a role in this process.
Yeah, and so for most contractors who work in the public space, it's a very normal process. Both across public administration, public safety, and even K-12s and higher edits. Those type of clients are realizing the same tax savings. And there's also design build. I think many of you are familiar with design build. Progressive design build is one where you would bring in your design team. Your design builder is essentially either one entity or a builder with an architect and design team underneath them. And they'd be working with your team to help develop the drawings as you went. It's like construction management at risk. To me, it feels more collaborative, whereas if you go to the stipulated sum and you bid a project, you know, you're kind of stuck with who's going to build it, and things are going to change in the middle of construction. Technology is going to be upgraded between the time you start design, you start specifying security technology, to the time where it actually has to start going in. So getting out ahead of those type of things, getting a true grasp on where the supply chain is on any given piece of equipment or technology at the time. It's over the last few years, we've seen it fluctuate quite a bit. I mean, today it's switchgear, it's generators. 2 years ago it was plywood and a bunch of other copper and a bunch of other strange things. So having someone on board early, I think, is a benefit to JSO and the city acting as an advocate. Because at the end of the day, when you're being selected on best value instead of lowest cost, the ultimate goal is to work for the client again in the future. And the only way to do that is to be as much of your advocate as possible. If you're just hard bidding a project, you can bid the next job even if you don't do a good job on the previous one. So, you're motivated to be in alignment with the desired outcomes of the JSO in the city. So, any other thoughts on that, Ian?
Yeah, I think design build also gives you a little better speed to market, because you can, in design build, as the design's still being finalized, you can start foundations, you can get out of the ground, so you can do multiple phases of a GMP. So there's lots of creative ways to move forward with the progressive design build, and that seems to be the model that I was just at the DBIA conference the end of last week, and that is a model that a lot of institutions and agencies are moving to because it allows the collaboration. So we talked a little bit earlier about needing to bring a professional in. You can bring a professional in right now under progressive design build define the architecture, define the project as you go, and you build the budget as you're designing, and you're tweaking it as you're designing. You're designing to a target value as opposed to getting the cheapest thing on day one.
All right. So
I would be remiss if I didn't ask Mr. Cabral to speak to the practice of design build. Is that something you're off, obviously, ultimately, this is going to fall under your purview. Is that an area that you're comfortable in working?
Yes, but typically for these larger projects, our engineering division will handle these.
Okay. So that doesn't fall under your responsibility? I apologize. I'm not sure where your guardrails are.
My responsibility comes when the facility is built.
Oh, once okay, maintenance of the facility. So it's the engineering department we'd be working with.
Yes.
And who is that? Who's the head of that?
That would be Robin Smith.
Robin. Okay. Thanks.
If you look at the medical examiner's building being built now, that's a construction management at risk.
Got
delivery.
It.
So. Maybe of similar size, you know, relatively speaking. So, per the CCNA state statute, construction management risk, progressive design build are both allowable, and I'm fairly certain that the city has used those deliveries in the past.
And trying to figure out this whole the dynamics of, you know, consolidated government, sheriff's office, city of Jacksonville, obviously the taxpayers foot the bill coming through the city. For a sheriff's office building, and you talk about the team in place, the I guess you'd call them a consultant that would be the project manager. Who is their client? Is it the city? Is it the sheriff's office? Or can that be determined?
So there's a lot of project managers in a construction process. So we'll call it the owner's project manager. Someone like Gil Payne would have project managers on the build side, and the architect would have project managers on their side. I think what you're speaking to is the owner's project manager. So that, in some instances, could be someone designated by Public Works or by engineering. It could be an outside third-party firm that would be selected under that Competitive Consultants Negotiation Act through state statute. And their client would typically be the city. They, like I said, they're motivated to be, you know, selected for future work. So if JSO isn't happy, you're certainly going to let the city know, and that'll come into effect when they're checking references on the next job. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. Again, I'm looking, you know, this is probably going to be 3, 4, 5 years down the road before we actually get started, and I'm looking at the framework of when this project gets rolling, and we've had other buildings built within or for the sheriff's office through public buildings, and some of that challenge is when there is an issue, who gets to answer the question?
Yeah.
From my perspective, I want somebody within JSO to be responsible for answering the question, why didn't this get done, or is this getting done? So in that framework of determining who's responsible for what, I would really think that somebody from JSO has to be in there to be held accountable for this project moving forward at the pace it should be moving forward.
And that's the very point you're trying to make.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to delineate who's, you know, where's that chain of command.
I think having that responsibility matrix is very important in a situation like this. And if you add another owner's representative or owner's project manager, they typically become the one reporting back to that.
Gotcha.
That management team, and the management team is making the decision. So they're able to take all this information that design firms, and contractors, and subcontractors deal with on a daily basis, and digest that down into something that's more easily communicated to folks in your position.
I think it stands to reason the JSO should have a large voice in that process.
Yeah.
If there's not a significant variation in the cost based upon it. So we as the city say, this is how much we're willing to pay for left-handed tables, you know, and we want right-handed tables. Okay, well, as long as the cost is the same, have at right-handed tables.
And I suspect that JSO's involvement is going to be more heavily on the design side. And I think, you know, in those three different delivery methods, you look at design build and construction management at risk, where the contractor or the design builder is involved in the design process, I think your team is going to ask of the professionals you hire to run what-if analyses. What if we expanded, you know, the training space? What if we added a shooting range? What would that cost? And if not for having the construction management firm as a part of that team, helping provide those cost estimates, as you know, you're flying a little blind,
right,
frankly. So, anyways, good discussion. So I'm going to hand this off to Matt, or do you want to speak
a little bit? I'll start, and then Matt can pick it up. So as you asked us to talk about the purpose-built versus adaptation of existing, and the big thing is it depends. It depends what building is available. It depends, is it in the right location? You're going to hear an example about the Phoenix one. The building was in the right place, so it worked. Had the building been in the wrong place, it wouldn't have worked. So you're going for the jail next to it, and you're talking about other buildings, it becomes a little more difficult to maybe use a adaptation of an existing. But we're going to show you a good example of how it can be done. And then, in the interest of time, I'll let Matt jump in on this. Matt? Or Mike, did you want to lead it off?
Let me talk you through the Phoenix. I mean, what occurred. So, if you guys aren't too familiar, you know, Phoenix, fifth largest city in the country, 1.6 million residents here. The police department, in their existing condition, is probably sounds a lot like what we heard today, right? Phoenix. They're in a building that was built in 1974. They're in 140,000 square feet. At the time it was built, the city was only a third the size it is today. So, you know, at one time the building did contain inmate holding and a crime lab and records and employee services and recruitment, training, city courts, all those things have been relocated out of the building, right? The building has divested itself of so much of its services that are core to police headquarters. And in addition, you know, they play musical chairs constantly. And they have shrunk down the individual workspaces over time to like 6x6 as the primary size for detectives. And so they're really in a bind. And in addition, the maintenance is a lot of deferred maintenance and a lot of costs that and reinvestment that would need to happen in the existing building, it doesn't make any sense. So they've moved on. I think one of the things that really, really made a huge difference is there's no longer any public services available at the police headquarters. You cannot go to the police headquarters to receive services as a community member. If you do walk in there, what they do is they tell you to go around the corner to the McDonald's, and an officer will drive up in a car and meet you there. That is a terrible place for community to be. So there's no good community interaction. It's not open and welcoming. It doesn't present a good image of the police department, and it's really a concrete fortress is what they are living in. So in 2018, we were contracted to do a master plan study, and we did the work very similar to what we heard about this morning. We went in and we determined who should be in the headquarters, how much space each person would need in a very detailed fashion. And we did a growth study for 30 years to understand that if the city was going to commit this amount of money and build a building, they needed to build a building that was going to last for a significant period of time. In addition to growth over time, which we can predict pretty well from you know, census models and expansion of the population, the department was currently understaffed, and maybe you're feeling some of this as well. We're playing catch up from the hiring freeze and staff cuts of the recession. And it just takes so long to add officers and to add people. that once funding was reinstated and picked up, they're hundreds of officers behind where they should be today. So what the city asked us to do was look through that, come up with what is the actual need, and then in addition, look at five potential sites. There were one block sites that the city owned, and we analyzed each block and we gave pros and cons, and there's a lot of information there that you'll be doing when you're analyzing where you're going to go. There's a financial question of that, and what is it going to take to buy it, to put infrastructure in, and all of that. And then there's sort of the esoteric questions that come out of that, like what is my transportation like? Will my employees want to go here? Will they feel safe? Will this be attractive to the community and to our employees? And so we looked at all of those kinds of factors and made some recommendations. And in the end, you know, really we looking for a new facility that was basically open and welcoming to the public, provides that professional image of the department, and really projects what they aspire to be, and helps them attract employees and retain employees, and then brings all those scattered services back into one single facility where they can interact properly and be more efficient in their jobs. And so our recommendation was 400,000 square feet on 10 floors, basically filled a city block with a 900-car parking garage adjacent. So that was going from the current headquarters of 140 to a new headquarters of 400,000 square feet. Just throw that out there. Because you were talking about numbers this morning. I was curious about the numbers I heard this morning. It was really interesting. And that took up roughly two city blocks in downtown Phoenix. The project cost, for total project cost that we came up with at the time, and this was 2019, was $342 million. Did not include any property. So then, after we did that study, concurrently, they were looking at existing buildings, and the Wells Fargo building became available. If you go back, can you just go back to the previous slide? So on this slide, on the left, the tall building is City Hall. On the right is the Wells Fargo Tower. And that's a historic building at this point. It's been there for 50 years. It's actually older than the building that the police department is moving out of. But it was quite an opportunity. It's 512,000 square feet. Pretty well maintained. The bank was not, you know, too cheap. They spent money on their own building. And the city was able to purchase that building for $46.5 million. Roughly $90 a square foot, which is a smoking deal. They also received all of the furniture, which was abandoned in place, all of the interior furnishings, every chair and every desk, which is about $5 million in assets that was conveyed to the city. So they had a very good starting point. And really the location for, as a government center, is excellent. Really, that is key. So it's attractive building. It's reasonably well maintained. It is obviously meant to have the public come to it as a bank. It has a stellar public space. It has a three-story atrium lobby, and it's immediately adjacent to City Hall. So it's very, very distinctive on that side. The disadvantage, of course, is that it wasn't built as a police station. It doesn't meet any current codes for hardening or reinforcing or structure. It doesn't have emergency backup power. It doesn't have any of the NFPA requirements that would usually be applied for a communication center or for other facilities like that. It's not a very hardened building in the way that we would do typically on a new build with anti-terrorism force protection. But you know, we're trying to address all those things during the design process. But everything is a trade-off, right, at this point. Every decision that's made about those kinds of issues becomes a trade-off, and what can we do? And so we did a renovation study initially and we looked at how does the department fit into this building, how do the 23 bureaus get spread out over the floors. And I will tell you that originally when the city saw this as, you know, 500,000 plus square feet, they assumed that the police department and other city departments would be able to fit in there, because we originally told them they only needed 400,000 square feet. The problem is, as an older tower, the floors aren't very efficient, and by the time you sort of take out the cores and you look at how circulation works and everything else, over time it became clear that it would not work well to mix any other departments into this building. And that really they would occupy most of it. When they move in, there will be two empty floors. And those that square footage is dedicated to future growth for the police department. The driving factor of where we're going with the design, which we're just wrapping up the design now, and we had a kickoff for construction officially last week. Construction has been ongoing around the edges, so to speak, for the last couple of months. But to move the communication center in is really the driving force and is the first project that's being activated. The construction will occur, and the design has been finalized from the top of the building down. If you want to go to the next slide, you can see the sort of cutaway of it. The top three floors are communications. There's 115 dispatch and call taker consoles that are going on the upper floors, and a floor of communications management. And then as each floor gets completed, the contractor basically builds their way down the building and out. So the last areas to be completed would be the public areas and the public lobby. And then the move-in over time will be, you know, rolled in as well. So that's going to be very complex, but the you know, there is space on the site to manage it when you have employees and construction going at the same time. But we expect to get we're starting construction now. It's kind of started earlier this year. We expect to be done with construction in 2026, and be complete and moved in and out of where they are now. Any questions about that, or the process, or how we studied it, or came up with numbers, or anything like that?
So as the floors are completed, will they then become operational? So the moving the call center in, for example, as that those couple, first top, those top three floors are completed?
Yes, they will be operational. Yeah. So and then, you know, you have to realize there's a few, you know, there's disadvantages, like there won't be a fitness center, there won't be, you know, some break spaces, there won't be some of the service stuff that comes in lower floors that support employee ongoing day-to-day won't be in place, but they will, you know, they will roll in over the next 12 months after they move in.
Thank you.
What are the total floors on this building?
There's 27 floors. Or 27 levels. It does have a complete basement. That actually, the basement is the entire city block, which also extends under the parking garage next door. As part of this sale, the city did receive two parking garages as well, for the same money. So that was a big bonus.
That's a good deal. I think what's important too, as you start occupying the building, going down, that transition into the new space, that's an effort in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Coordinating, yeah. Getting the staff from their existing facility into the new one. So that type of service would need to somehow be integrated into the total delivery of the project.
Yes. And so the city did hire a construction manager. There are a variety of, so they are directly contracting some work. They, under their current job order contract process, because it is an existing building and because a lot of the work is maintenance, for example, they are renovating the garage elevators, or replacing, essentially rebuilding the garage elevators. That's not a piece of work that they needed to put into the construction manager at risk's contract. There were a lot of things like rebuilding the chillers that could be done separately using their sort of standard maintenance contracts. So there's probably 16 construction contracts that are being managed concurrently on this project, and there's a lot of moving parts going on at the same time.
On the original proposal, it was a 400,000 square foot building at 10 floors and 900 car parking garage. Estimate $342 million, is that correct?
Yes.
And what is the overall cost of this, said and done with 16 contracts and the renovation that you're doing?
So the it's going to be probably right around $200 million. The construction contract is currently $120 million. That's the primary contract. And then, you know, design fees and project management and all of these maintenance repair contracts, we're gonna be around $200 million, not including the purchase of the building. So, you know, you could call it $250 million all in. So that's a significant savings. I think it's less than ideal for the police department overall. It's a tremendous upgrade for the police department. But it is fraught with compromises, and you know, some are operational, not just aesthetic and so on.
Certainly, thank you. Yeah, there is a lot of compromise, you know, on anything, whether it's new construction or if it's a renovation. There's always, you know, the pros and cons, like we're talking about now. So that's yes. Opens our eyes to what some of these are. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to the need to have that early study. And kind of incorporate that into the services that are solicited.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, thanks, Matt. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the design, what we might anticipate for the design of facilities, including some of the trends. Kudos to everything that you've done so far. I mean, your presentation earlier was wonderful, and you hit on a number of things that we were going to bring up, too, including some of the trends. Some of those are like family and victim advocacy areas, focus on employee wellness, right? Your employees are going to be there much longer than anybody, even those staying in the jail. So focus on the employees, making sure that the employee wellness is there, having a balance. We like the idea of the daycare, certainly, you know, gyms and things like that. So a couple of things, too, that we see a lot in trends in the industry, and Matt can add to some of these, too. But there's a lot of focus on each of the bureaus and each of the departments on what they're going to do. So for example, in Port Patrol, you know, we really try to focus on what is it like if you're a patrol officer when you enter the facility, and typically in parking you come in one way and go out the other. But what is it like when the officer goes in there? What's the first thing they go to? Is it the bathroom? Is it the break rooms or whatever? And kind of understanding all of those processes. And then we also, one of the trends that we see too right now is co-ed locker rooms. And what we do on those is we've got a large locker room, and then the toilet rooms and shower rooms are all individual. So there'll be changes in the locker room, but there's plenty of spaces for those. And that really helps too with the change of population. I'm sure back in the day, right, 90% of officers were probably male. That changes, and you don't know what it's going to be like in the future, so just having one large open locker room helps with that. We're seeing a lot more public interface. Like Matt described, the current City of Phoenix building, it is a concrete bunker, and you'd be surprised that if we told you that was the City of Phoenix current police department. There's a lot more public interface, and we see the lobbies a lot more welcoming. We want the public to be able to come in and feel welcome and not feel pushed back and separated. And at the same time, we have to balance that out with security, right? Obviously, we understand security is paramount. Some of the ways that we try to handle that is that a lot of our buildings are the exterior walls are made out of concrete. A lot of times what we do is put the windows up high. I'm 6'7". Sometimes we put the windows at 6 feet or so to protect most people. Of course, I'm a target at that point, but we really try to focus on the safety and also and still let in a lot of natural light and those kinds of things. Matt, did you want to add anything on current trends? I've got some other stuff to talk about on this slide.
Well, I see you got technology on there. I was glad to hear brief mention of real-time crime this morning. That is cropping up and being discussed, depending on where an agency is and their overall strategy. In Phoenix, we've dedicated a floor of the building to real-time crime. They don't have the staff dedicated yet. They're collecting information on how to do that. I'm sure what we are designing and what we're going to build will get remodeled several times in the future as that gets refined. But that's a necessary part of policing, and it's become increasingly valuable. There's some great examples out there to look at. In our own community, Mesa has a very good proactive real-time crime center, and they can demonstrate how they're actually getting ahead of crime, and how they're able to use that facility to direct their officers come along with the dispatchers and actually make the arrests safer, faster. It's quite an impressive thing. And so allowing space for that, even if you don't have a full time, even if you haven't worked all the bugs out, right? You will work the bugs out. That's something that needs to be allocated.
So we also have a keen focus on sustainability, and sustainability is definitely doing what's best for the Earth, for Mother Earth and the environment. But we also look at your long-term costs, and if we were to look at a facility, oftentimes if you own a building for 30 to 50 years, if you look at the original capital cost of what it cost to build the building originally, sometimes that's 5 to 10% of the overall cost of what you're going to spend. The vast majority of your expenses is going to be in staffing, and then maintenance and paying for the power bill and all of those kinds of things. So if we can build facilities and design facilities and build facilities that are more efficient, more staff efficient, more secure for staff, and also more durable, that uses less energy in the long run, you'll save far more money. So that's really a focus. I talked a little bit about technology and some of the future things. So we can all kind of imagine in the future, 30, 40, 50 years from now, I would imagine most of your vehicles are going to be electric vehicles, so planning a facility, we want to make sure how are we going to plug in all of these vehicles. We're seeing a lot, you were talking about the jail was going to be a component, we're seeing a lot more electronic monitoring, those kinds of things for inmates, kind of early release, electronic monitoring, coming and checking with probation and those kinds of things. We talked about the real-time crime center. You could imagine what that's going to be like 30 or 40 years from now. So as we're designing facilities, we want to really kind of understand, make sure these spaces are flexible to adapt to future technologies. A couple of things, too, that we, and some of these are kind of questions. So we really appreciate the earlier presentation, what we're talking about here. We understand that there's a sheriff's office or police station, but they really can't stand alone. There's so many other things going on. We understand this is what we do for a living. We have all the public safety, law enforcement, courts, jails, all of those kinds of things. So, kind of understanding. It was earlier mentioned that the jail would also go with this new police station. What about the courts? Where would the courts be located? Is the intent to locate it near an existing courts, or would there be also
a new court? Well, obviously, they've been doing first appearance virtually for the most part since COVID, obviously, and I think there's still some discussion as to whether or not that's a preference of the judges themselves. Obviously, presently, we Sallyport or transport from the jail, which is, 10 blocks, 12 blocks, to the courthouse. I think there is some thought about adjacency as an issue for some of this. I think we're pretty well landlocked, the ability to build a facility adjacent to the existing courthouse. Venture a guess, that's the case. That's a conversation we will have down the road. But I think in the ideal situation, yes, adjacency would be ideal, but I don't think we're going to be in a position to be able to do that.
And we recently finished a project, this about 3 or 4 years ago, finished a project, and it was, it's called the Intake Transfer Release Facility. So it's for Maricopa County.
Right.
And the whole, the idea would be all of the bookings and everything happens in that one facility. You would see the judge, your first appearance is right there, and there's also housing. So and for Maricopa County, this for this client specifically, they were spending about $8 million a year just in transportation. And because you get booked in one area, you get busted with the court, you're held there, you see the judge, he tells you, he says, you know, you get 2 or 3 days or whatever on your DUI, and then they have to bus them back to another facility, and they're always moving people. So this facility combined all of that into one.
Sure. And that is not an uncommon. One of the good things about being the chair of the committee, I'm attending all the working groups, and that whole very process of that creating that flow for intake and moving people through with the goal, frankly, getting them out of the building completely.
Yeah.
It's not about trying to retain them or detain them for future things. It's getting through that process so they can go home that day or the next day.
Yeah.
I think their goal is 24 to 72 hours.
Great.
In terms
Great.
Of getting people flow through the process.
Yeah, and that's going to save a lot of money.
And that's something we will do as the working groups come together, we'll start to, okay, how do we mesh and merge what that working group has done? Ours is sort of freestanding, but adjacent in some respect. But I think if we're taking a look at housing and the behavioral and mental health services position of all of this, and Tracy and others know, they've sat in on many of these meetings, it's pretty complicated for us to figure out how we're going to do all that and where the priorities are in that respect.
There was mention that there's a medical examiner facility already under construction.
Correct.
Is there, we oftentimes see, those combined, has that been thought of? Okay, so that could be kind of standalone.
I don't think we want to touch that one. It's already in the neighborhood. It's having a little some issues. But I will tell you this: last week we visited the, and it's not part of this conversation necessarily. U of Health handles all of the behavioral and mental health and physical issues that JSO has, and that facility is wanting as well in this process, and I think that's something we're going to take a look at. If we talk about a campus-like facility, I fully expect that you would see, freestanding buildings that speak specifically to each of the housing and long-term housing, short-term housing, recidivism, all those kind of things. So we'll see how that plays out. It's just
that's
a matter
great.
Of, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure where we're going to land, and it's not really up to me to decide that. But all those are on the table, let's put it that way.
And there's certainly efficiencies in the campus style and including backup of resources if there was ever, if your police department's directly adjacent to the jail and there was an issue at the jail,
Obviously the expansion too. It makes it a whole lot easier to expand once you say we're going to build for the next 20 years, but do we have the capacity to expand that for the next 40 years?
Mm-hmm. How about a shooting range? That's another thing that we see oftentimes in these kinds of facilities. Is that being planned for, or is that just...
So currently our range is co-located with our prison facility that's on the north side of the county. So there's no... Not that we wouldn't like a smaller range in a PMB, but that's not a high priority.
Okay. And then oftentimes training, wherever you do training, so do you do training...
Yeah, we have a totally separate academy. Just to give you a big picture... our patrol division, for example, is broken up into 6 districts. Each district has a patrol substation. So we really don't have a lot of patrol officers coming to our police memorial building. Most of that work is done in throughout the city. We also have a separate training academy where it's co-located with one of our community colleges on the north side. And a few miles from that is where our prison farm is and where the range is that goes with that. So we do have a lot of diverse... we have an off-site canine location. We have an off-site spot for our mounted unit, aviation, of course, that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, that's really helpful. Canine was another component, too. Is that canine officers, or are they also in that kind of...
Yeah, they have their own building with the needs that they have that's separate from our police memorial building, and we would keep it that way. And then they mainly operate out in the field on a day-to-day basis.
Like the central communications and 911 call center, those things, was the idea that would be located in this new facility?
Correct. So we currently have 2. We have our main facility, which is there at our police memorial building, which again is, and I think I spoke of it earlier, where we're space limited there. We also have a backup facility that we actually do use full-time as well. It's out at on the west side of the county. Fire has some dispatchers in there as well. The idea in the beginning was you'd have your primary, and that would be our backup facility. If there was an emergency, power went down, hurricane, whatever, they could go to this backup facility and have that spare. But we use it now as that extra capacity for our personnel. So they actually do dispatching currently out of the two facilities.
Oh, great. It's good to have a backup. Like booking and evidence, I would assume that if there was a new campus, new police headquarters and jail, would that be the primary booking area?
So booking is done over at our jail. So, and again, I think we spoke on it earlier, that whole process is under review for booking. Do we have a main off-site housing for our jail and then a separate booking receiving area? That's a possibility. Again, that's kind of out of our purview on this for our purposes. There's a whole separate committee for the jail side of it. When it comes to property and evidence, we have an off-site facility that is getting near capacity. So our officers actually go, they don't go to our headquarters building for that. They go to this off-site facility for dropping evidence off. If it has to be processed for evidence purposes, you know, if something needs to go for DNA testing or firearms testing, it actually has to go to a different location. So there's a lot of transport cost right now. So ideally, yes, in a new building, we would want a long-term off-site storage facility for evidence that we're going to have to hold for 50 years, like a homicide, you know, keep that long term, but then have a separate facility there at our police memorial building where our crime labs are, where all that would be co-located to cut out most of that transport of evidence.
Okay. Yeah. We do a lot of evidence for our facilities, so we're very, very familiar with chain of custody. And we've got some of our people that are actually certified in that process. So, yeah, that's really good to know. And then, like, vehicle and fleet, but it sounds like most of your patrol officers are at a different facility, and I would assume there's fleet services. And
so, things. Yeah, so there is. So all of our vehicles are serviced under the city fleet management. We do have a liaison office there. So all procurement of city vehicles, including JSO cars, is done through city fleet, which is at a whole another location. Correct. And that would stay the same.
Okay. That's good to know. Matt, do you have anything you wanted to ask?
No, I don't. That's good.
Yeah, and just to throw this out there, Chief O'Neill, who couldn't be here today, we and several of our team have gone around to some of the newer facilities up in the Chicago area and some here in Florida. And so I've seen a lot of the things that you've been speaking about the locker rooms and that thing. So we have kind of seen those ideas. I'd be more than willing, or any of our team would be more than willing to sit down with whoever has interest to give a more accurate picture of what we currently look like, because we are very, very different than a lot of agencies. We do things vastly different than they do in the Chicago area, for example. And so we'd be more than willing to sit down with anybody and kind of give a thumbnail sketch of how we operate currently and what our ideal would be, you know, with that new PMB. So
That's great. And as we mentioned, too, we also do quite a bit of correctional work. And I understand this committee is focused on police. We'd be happy to also be on that committee or help with that committee too. So maybe I can just kind of coordinate that to Ryan.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, I really do appreciate the time and energy you all putting into this, and want to provide you every opportunity to every organization, company, business that are in the architects, construction folks, design people, because that's what we're learning from. So all of you will have more than an opportunity. And Sonia will follow up with you to get your information to make sure you're aware. For example, the working groups are at different levels in terms of their work. I think one of them is all but finished. We're well on our way, whereas another one's hardly started. So we're trying to get them fired up and what they're trying to do. But we'll provide that information. It is they're all notice meetings, so they are on public records. You can find them on the city council and the city website as well.
Okay.
All right. So we got two or three more slides. Take up too much of your day. As we talked about the building of the project, one thing that was interesting is that you're going to look at doing some equipment purchase. So having a design builder on or a construction manager at risk, and being able to create those equipment packages. We've worked with a number of clients where we've actually done everything but actually send out the solicitation, because that would have to go through the city. But you can have your construction company prepare all that information, help select all the stuff, so that it's just a purchase.
Right.
So I would not go down the road of we'll do all the purchasing, because
no.
It'll overwhelm your. We've seen that before. And
you hand us in the silver platter. Well, this is what you need.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what you need to pay for.
Yeah. Post this. Yes. So again, it just makes everyone's, because we're used to doing that. We're very familiar with it. And I mean, even subcontractors are happy to do that. Your HVAC subcontractor, while you're getting close.
Right.
The other thing we've been able to do on some, and it might be there are ways in some states, and I don't know Florida well enough, that you can have the construction company purchase it, and there is a form that gets filled out and submitted. So there may be more than one way to skin that.
You can do that.
Yeah. So
in Florida, you can do that?
It's called an owner direct purchase program. And
I got killed in Georgia on a project I did for public broadcasting some years ago.
Really?
Yeah, so it took a lot of years to get tax back.
Yeah, so you basically they don't even collect tax when this has been. So
okay.
It's not even a refund. It's just it never gets collected because there's a form that's consistent with it, so everyone knows. And some of the drivers of what we're seeing today, switchgear is 18 months out. Generators are 2 years out. It's just incredible, the backlog of from the pandemic of what people are doing and what the needs are. So being able to do doing the traditional design to build, you can't do any of that. That's your longest duration. If you can do something more progressive, you can get that stuff bought. You can do target value design. So basically, we say, hey, if the city council says, hey, we get $150 million, that's what you get for the project. We work to that budget as opposed to, and then we have, and as I think Ryan was talking about earlier, we have choice estimates. We create a cost choice law. And we go down, we rank everything, okay, this is the most important, so if we're a little bit over budget, okay. And then the sheriff's department's in the discussion, the city's in the discussion. What is most important for this? It might be that we certainly don't want to drop anything on the maintenance side, but can we leave an area kind of not completed that is a future space? We build the space, but not completely finish it out. So if we finish that later, if you grow. There's lots of different ways, lots of choices that can be gathered as we go through.
You go to the next one?
Steve,
could you go to the next slide?
Next slide?
So, maintenance. So, as Mike was saying earlier, the cost of the building is going to be the cheapest cost over 30 to 50 years. Maintenance is going to probably cover that as well. I mean, it's just to maintain the building, never mind the staffing and everything else. So if you make the decisions to use the right equipment, it's sustainable, it lasts longer, you're going to reduce your maintenance costs as you go. So it might be, if you make $50,000 more today, we're going to save $100,000 later over that period of time. So really looking at the ends in mind as opposed to...
Yeah, to that point, and I'm not an engineer, so I can't speak to it, but JEA, our local utility, is very proactive in providing chilled water. So in the context of taking a look at HVAC systems, obviously if you've got a chilled water system available to you, it could have a huge impact on your cost of HVAC.
It just depends where it is.
Yeah,
exactly.
We've got it, and that would be a consideration we take a look at.
Right.
You know, this over the course of 30, 40 years, having access to chilled water can make you a huge number.
And in the state of California, they say it's net zero because it doesn't cost them anything for the building to use that chilled water.
Right.
It's free.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously understanding what your current contracts are for maintenance, what do you currently outsource, what do you want to outsource in the future, and making sure we get the right equipment that interfaces with that, the right types of pieces that really want to be there. So,
And I'll add, you know, when these buildings are handed over to the users, Mr. Carter, you know, planning in advance for the facilities management systems that you're going to use, and then getting the right data from the design and construction team to import into those systems, that needs to be coordinated as well, so that it's you're taking control of the building in stride from a facilities management standpoint, and then having preventative maintenance programs in place that alert you to say, hey, I think it's time to change that filter. Hey, I think it's time that belt is taken a look at. Those are other things that it can really improve the longevity and the life of the building and reduce costs overall in the future. Financing, we'll be quick on this. I know we've only got about 10 minutes or so. Generally speaking, developing a project cost model is something that once you have your program figured out, you're probably going to want to do. It helps kind of establish that base cost, and then the time frame of when you actually start construction will determine how much escalation happens between that cost model and what the actual cost is for you. There are models that we're seeing throughout the country for public-private partnerships. I don't know who's familiar with those. They're essentially privatizing social infrastructure. I think Fulton County is looking at one right now for a jail. Essentially, it's a long-term lease where a developer or a private entity is building the social infrastructure. They're finding the financing. They can provide some of the maintenance functions for the building. In this situation, I would think JSO wants full operation of the building. And the benefit to that is, especially in a campus-style program, you could lump that into one program. And if the city doesn't have the capital available today to build everything at once, the capital market surely can. They've got creative ways of identifying financing in a way that it's probably, you know, there's probably not much of a difference between their ability to borrow money versus the city. So very, very, very complicated program, and getting it pushed through is a very long strategy, but something to consider. I mean, if you want this campus style and you do the police memorial building first and you wait for financing or for city council to approve funding for the jail, you may just be waiting, whereas if you wanted a full campus at one time, this may be a solution, so something out there. Tammy, are you still on?
Hi. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you, Tammy. Go ahead, Tammy.
Yes, I'm with Collier's Project Leaders. I was wondering, have you applied for any of the FEMA or DHS funding specifically for EOC projects?
No. At this point, we haven't.
You have not?
No, not that I'm familiar.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I do have a comment. Tammy, I do appreciate you being here today, and I look forward to hearing your comments. I think once we bring the full committees back together, for all five working groups back together, and start talking about, you know, how we're going to merge and purge our ideas and talk about funding with a larger committee, that would be very helpful. Just wanted to give you a heads up that we'll be asking you to make a presentation down the road as well. Okay. You still there?
I think from Tammy's standpoint, generally the grant funding opportunities, I think early in the process, if there are grants that are available federally, statewide, you know, you should run an analysis of, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? Some of them certainly come with some stipulations that you'd have to kind of consider and work around.
But it just so happens a former sheriff is also a member of Congress right now, so that doesn't hurt.
Just spoke to him 2 days ago.
So certainly there's some opportunities in having someone on board, like Tammy's team, or you know, helps to identify and then prioritize which ones you'd like to chase, and then having them actually do the grant writing with the blessing of the city and JSO.
Tammy, do you have any initial thoughts that you want to offer? I wasn't trying to cut you off. We lost your mic. You're muted.
Oh. All right.
It's frozen.
Well, I think we're getting close to time anyway.
I'm riding with someone in a vehicle and trying to maneuver my cell phone. Yes, there's a number of grant funding opportunities that I've seen over the past year for other clients. that you can apply for in phases and get some of these projects paid for with grant funding.
Great. We look forward to hearing more about those in the future.
Great.
Yes. I just put my contact information in the chat for a follow-up if you would like to follow up on that.
Thank you.
Funding opportunities.
Sure.
That's it. I mean, I think, you know, what we heard a lot today was collaboration is important, early planning, getting the right voices in the room, having a strategy for how decisions are made. Obviously, there's a lot of lessons learned as it relates to the program spaces and things like that that we didn't have time to get into today. But nonetheless, you know, thank you to Chris, thank you to Matt, Mike, and Tammy. Any other questions from the group?
I certainly encourage you to take advantage of Assist Chief's offer of maybe touring the facilities, get a sense of what the operation is now, and a little closer look at that. And that's for all the entities who want to play in this arena.
Awesome. So I guess I'll just roll into next
Please.
Meeting. So next meeting is on the 27th. We're going to have HDR present. It's going to kind of dovetail, I think, well with the discussion we had today relative to, you know, all this early planning and then how do you make that a reality. Ajax is going to have a presentation, and we're working on a few different other sheriffs who've been through a similar thing, getting them here or virtually to speak to the process they went through, what they enjoyed about the process, and what they would have done differently. So I may be reaching out to you, too, to have some. Maybe I can get a quicker way to the right person through your office.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And just to touch on that, we've actually done that a little bit. We went down, spoke with the chief of police in Gainesville, who not only did his facility, but actually Tallahassee PDs as well.
Yep.
So we've been doing that here and there, and we're going to continue doing that. Orlando is a target area, a couple spots down near Tampa. So.
Okay.
And if Sheriff Waters could join us for that, I assume he's already having some of these conversations, but it would be nice to have him, obviously, at one of these meetings just to understand and appreciate how important this is to him. We get it, but it's,
of course,
you know what I'm saying. All right. Ryan, thank you so much for doing this. I mean, the way this working group has flourished, I couldn't ask for a better process. And thank you, all of you, for the time and effort you put into it. Obviously, it matters a great deal to you. You have a vested interest.
Yes, sir.
Particularly Mr. Randolph over there, no doubt. No doubt.
Poor guy.
And so, as you've mentioned, our next meeting is on the 27th, mm-hmm. correct?
The meeting as a whole.
Yeah, no, the working group. Yes. Okay, so next Friday the 17th at 11:30 is the meeting of the committee as a whole to take a look at the numbers as it relates to specifically to any immediate needs, both for the Police Memorial Building and the Pretrial Detention Center. Welcome to join us if you like. It'll be in Linwood Roberts. It'll be here. And I assume we'll have Zoom available to us if we need to have anyone join us. But I suspect it's not going to be a long meeting. It's really going to review the list that you've provided us, as they have with the retention center, and we'll share that with the administration and see what we can do to get the ball rolling on both of those. And with that, we are adjourned.
I think you on Monday.